As I mentioned, we are picking up here in the third chapter, and it's beginning continuing this same thought of submission. And so we're going to look here at the first few verses, and really verses 1 through 6 of chapter 3. We sort of need to take all together, I think. I think it continues in a similar, you're not going to pick and choose certain verses out of it. I think we need to read it all within its context. And we'll kind of break up this reading a little bit for discussion this morning. So it begins in the first verse. It says, "Wives, likewise, be submissive to your own husbands. Even if some do not obey the word, they without a word may be won by the conduct of their wives. And when they observe their chaste conduct accompanied by fear. Do not let your adornment be merely outward, arranging the hair, wearing of gold, putting on fine apparel. Rather, let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the incorruptible beauty of the gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God." So what is Peter telling us here as he continues this idea on submission? Don't everybody speak at one time. Larry? Okay. Likewise. So he's picking up. So not only is it likewise, we just talked about how Christ was that example. And what is that example we talks about in verse 22? Who committed no sin, no deceit was found in his mouth. When he was reviled, he didn't revile in return. We also look at the idea of being submissive. We are supposed to submit to our government. We are supposed to submit to our masters or our employer relationship. And Christ was that example, even one who was unjustly accused, unjustly put to death, but yet there was no deceit found in his mouth. And so now we're in a situation where he is commanding the wives to submit to their own husbands. This is not a subjection of women to all men, but they are submitting to their husbands. And then why is it important that they submit to their husband, other than commanded that that's the relationship that is set up? But what is the context that it's talking about here? Is this a believing or a non-believing husband? It is either way, but why is it even more important perhaps when it's a non-believing husband?
For the example that
they can be that example. And I think that's why we need to take all of these sort of verses here together, because it even goes from there, and we can get back to the idea unbelieving husband, but why does it begin to talk about their outward apparel and their adornment? Is that something completely separate? How would that tie into submission? Tim?
It's the focus on
care. Okay. It's the heart is what it's talking about there. And so when he's beginning to talk about let your chaste conduct, and so it has something to do with the apparel in which you would put on, and he is telling them that that's not the focus there, and how you might dress to either, impress your husband or, but it's more about the idea of the sort of incorruptible beauty that you can have with that gentle and quiet spirit. That's what's going to begin to convince him that the lifestyle that you live, the commitment to God, that's what's going to begin to win that person over to Christ in the example that she can be. Other thoughts or comments about these verses? Tim? Sure. And I think we're going to get into more of that even later as it begins to talk about the sort of verses 5 through 6, it's going to talk about the example that Sarah was. And so there's some things in there that we're going to look at, certainly within this time, sort of first century and perhaps even before. The role of the woman, had very little rights, if any at all, in most cultures at this particular time. And there were began, perhaps, as some commentators would speculate, I guess, that once a woman became a Christian, so now there's neither slave nor free, and does this now, if my husband's not a believing husband, does this now allow me to not submit to him because he's not a believer? Well, that's exactly what Peter is preaching against, is that no, you still need to submit to him. But in doing so, there are some guidelines here that we're going to get into in terms of how the man needs to now give honor to that woman, because that woman is now deciding to submit to someone. And so it's not about trying to find it's the weaker vessel here and then domineering over that person. She has elected to be submit. And what now the man must give honor to that, because she has approved of or has that role in which God has sort of set forth. Thoughts or comments? Exactly. Right. And that's the motivation there. The motivation there is not only that God command that, but this is how she should conduct herself in that incorruptible beauty, that gentle and quiet spirit in the sight of God. And he says that is precious to him. Other thoughts or comments, Bruce? Sure. Other thoughts or comments? We move a few more verses there, starting in verse 5. And again, he's continuing this same thought, for in this manner, when they are gentle and a quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God, for in this manner, in former times, the holy women who trusted in God also adorned themselves, being submissive to their own husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters you are, if you are good and not afraid with any terror. So again, he's showing that this has been an example that they have always had, is that those women who were holy, those women who trusted in God, they adorned themselves in this way and submitted to their own husbands. And the example that he gives us there is Sarah calling him Lord, and again, Lord with the sort of lowercase L. There was a sign of respect is what Sarah is offering to Abraham. And Abraham wasn't always right in all of his decisions that he made, but yet she called him Lord in the things that as he was head of his house there. Any thoughts or comments? Sure. And I hadn't picked up on that idea where we had just talked about the sort of outward apparel and the outward beauty, but it's the inner beauty, and Sarah had that, and that's what she was commended for. Other thoughts or comments, Larry?
Specific example of one
Sure.
Communication with this.
Right.
But you're seeing this in a lot of areas, and this is something I think we need to keep teaching and probably develop in some more detail because we've got a generation that doesn't understand it.
Right. Sarah? Sure. Very good point. Any other thoughts or comments? All right. And then if we look here, now the command somewhat moves, or what we need to begin to understand as husbands. Starting in verse 7, it says, "Husbands, likewise, dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered." And I think as husbands, we need to read that entire verse. I don't think we need to stop where it just says we just need to dwell with them, giving them honor as the weaker vessel. But that there is a command here as we get towards the end of this verse, because if we do not treat them with honor, then our prayers are going to be hindered. And so I think that's something that all of us need to understand. If we break this verse down a little bit, as we dwell with them with understanding, what does that mean? Dwell with them with understanding.
Some say it's an impossible command.
Okay. Jared? According to knowledge, okay.
I think it has to do with knowledge of their needs.
Okay, all right. And I think another part of that is, I mean, and perhaps this was maybe a more of a different culture where they looked at this verse as being something, as long as I paid the bills for her, but it wasn't an understanding. It wasn't a partnership that they had there. It goes much more so than making sure that her physical needs are sort of met, but it means that they are dwelling together. They are living together, and he lives together with her with understanding and giving her the honor that is due her. Thoughts or comments? So the section that I guess gets talked about a lot is as to the one with the weaker vessel. What is Peter getting at there? Okay.
We're to treat them like something special, like you would treat something that you didn't want broke and you wanted it taken care of.
Okay.
Like if you're moving and you have something that you don't want broke, you don't just throw it in the pile with everything else,
right.
Tape it in a box and send it on.
Okay. You protect
it?
Sure.
In a certain way.
Okay. Other thoughts or comments? As unto a weaker vessel. What is Peter getting at? Certainly, I don't believe it's pointing to the fact that spiritually she's any weaker. I mean, she is heirs with us. So that's not what Peter is talking about. Yeah. Right. Okay. Certainly. Other thoughts or comments? Larry?
It would certainly would be nice for those who are seeking a mate to naturally want to find one that would be an heir of life with you together to go to help one another go to heaven.
Sure. And so if we look at this idea of being, as Peter points out, the weaker one, as Ashley pointed out, that perhaps this is the fact that There is a sort of leadership role, and it puts her in subjection to man. And so in that sense, perhaps that's pointing out the weaker. Stan pointed out the fact that weaker is that it is something we value. It is something that is precious to us, and we care and protect that because it is as one that is weaker. Not that it is calling her weaker, but then we are heirs together of the grace of life that your prayers may not be hindered. Any other thoughts or comments? For those men, you understand Jimmy's not here, so you're going to have to step it up a little bit, right, for your comments. I only prepared enough knowing that Jimmy's here, so he did not tell me he was going to be out of town. So. Yes, very
and
much so.
Without that relationship with God, that's, you know, we can be doing everything else right. And I've seen people that have, you know, they preach and they can do wonderful things, and their relationship with their mate is not very good. That's hindered, and that's
sure.
Not good.
That's right. That's right. Very good. Larry?
Again, since you threw out the thing about Jimmy.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. And again, they, you know, we look at it now, we're saying, okay, well, this was written 2,000 years ago. How long ago was this written where he's now calling back from first century to Abraham and Sarah? So now we have the same sort of generational piece there, and culturally it is not different. So again, God is the same now as he has always been. This is how he has wanted it to be, and it has been set up from the garden that this would be the submissive role that man and woman would take. Exactly. Any other thoughts or comments?
There was your well known understanding of it. So, again, men and women think differently.
That's right.
You know, as I get older, you know, we hopefully we're growing with our wives spiritually. We understand more. I know, you know, you're
good point. Sure.
Again, verse 7, of course, is a developmental thing that you mentioned, but this idea of our prayers not being hindered is not, of course, that there's some type of block between us. And
right.
Heaven, but it's more, I think, inside, as you're developing this idea and working with your wife and understanding you're developing along, sometimes you know you haven't done right. And I
right.
think I've gone in my prayers even
Sarah, do you have a comment?
Now you mentioned back at the beginning in the garden, but it's really after sin entered, you know, Sarah sinned first.
Right.
I mean, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And you know, we don't really know how that went down, but she obviously influenced Adam to sin. You know, we
that's right.
Know if she battered him, or if it took a while, or she just batted her eye a little bit. Or
that's right. That's right.
But the lesson is that women can have a great influence over
that's right.
a man.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
And, you know, that can be true in a marriage.
That's right.
In any relationship, you just have to
right.
both man and woman need to realize that.
And I think that goes back to the first set of verses we read here when we began class in terms of that adornment and the way in which you might have influence over a man in terms of how you might dress to influence his decision. And it's like bringing him to Christ isn't about what you might put on or badgering him about that, but it's about how you live a chaste and quiet life. That's what's going to bring him to Christ. Thoughts or comments? Right, yes. Good comment. Any other thoughts or comments? And then when we get into verse 8, it is somewhat wrapping up this idea of this sort of submissive character, and it's something that all of us are, it's not pointing out to women here, but it is finally to all of you. Be of one mind, having compassion for one another, love as brothers, be tenderhearted, be courteous, not returning evil for evil, reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, blessing, knowing that you were called to this, that you may inherit a blessing. And there's a number of things sort of here. This, I think, also harkens back to Jesus as our example, because there can be times in which there might be some reviling against us. There might be times, and hopefully within your marriage relationship, but when we're talking about the sort of employer-employee, the sort of day-to-day living among man, are we going to run into times when we have issues and people are saying things perhaps unfairly, unjustly against us? How do we return that? Do we return evil for evil? If someone treats us unkindly, or do we do the same thing to them? Do we lash out to them? I think he is warning us that that's not the way that a Christian should live. Those who are following after Christ, we should be loving them as brothers. We should be tenderhearted. We should be courteous. And we're not looking for ways to sort of take a pound of flesh from someone who perhaps has hurt us. Thoughts or comments? Larry?
Obviously, this is broader than the marriage, but it surely also applies to marriage. And sometimes, it's interesting, sometimes we might do that with everybody but our
wives. Right.
And even going back to the family, a lot of reasons why you should treat your mate that you ought to have a good relationship. And the most powerful one would be the effect of your children. Mm-hmm. You're trying to instill faith in your children. The best thing you can do is have a good relationship with
your wife. Sure.
But again, leadership, that's where leadership comes from. And you can talk about, with a local congregation, if we don't fix this here, what's stated here, you get in a situation where we can't grow. We end up
turning each other down. Right. Other thoughts or comments? Peter then goes on to provide for us a section of verses here, which comes from the Psalms. He says, "For he who would love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil, let his lips from speaking deceit. And let him turn away evil and do good, let him seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are open to their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil." And I think verse 11 is something that I think we live in a time right now where I think we can have some very polarizing ideas between whether it's right or the left. But I think we would do good in finding ways in which let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. I think we should be about seeking peace and finding ways in which that's what we pursue. Even though the world might be going a direction that we don't agree with, it doesn't necessarily mean that we lash out, we don't take on those types of things, but we need to find ways in which we pursue peace with all men. Other thoughts or comments about this psalm? Anything else you see in there that?
Knows
we're going to get into that next section here in verse 13 through 17 in terms of that fear, because there are going to be times perhaps we suffer when we are doing right. And so other thoughts or comments? Good comments. Any other thoughts or comments? And then this last section here for probably this morning, starting in verse 13, it says, And he who will harm you if you become followers, let me back up here, and who is he who will harm you if you become followers of what is good? But even if you should suffer for righteousness' sake, you are blessed. Do not be afraid of their threats, nor be troubled. But sanctify the Lord your God in your hearts, and always be ready to give a defense to anyone who is asked the reason for the hope that is in you, with meekness and fear, having a good conscience, that they may defame you as evildoers, you may revile, and those who revile you good, your good conduct in Christ may be ashamed. But if it is the will of God to suffer for doing good, than for doing evil. A number of things in here to sort of bring out. but who are those who are going to be harming us? Why is Peter bringing this up to them? Who would harm you if you're doing good? The world. I mean, the world is going to find ways in which, I mean, they don't perhaps agree with the choices that you make and the things in which you decide to live your life. They're going to find ways in which the world will perhaps find ways to do evil things to those people who are good or who are pursuing good. But even if you suffer for righteousness, even if you are doing right, he is telling us that it's why we should be standing strong, but you are blessed in doing so, and do not be afraid of their threats or troubled. Does that mean you're not going to get threats and you're not going to have trouble or tribulation? Is that what that means? Yeah, Scott? And with that, Scott, I mean, I think Jesus points that out in Matthew, the 10th chapter, where he says, "Do not fear those who can kill the body, but cannot kill the soul, but rather fear him who is able to destroy both the soul and the body in hell." So I think that, again, he's telling us to not be troubled because our home is not here. We've already told us that we are pilgrims in this land, and that's what he is reminding them of. And so the threats that are going to come, while they might be things that are very short-term, perhaps they don't feel they're short-term within our life in the way that we can see them, but they are certainly short-term in terms of eternity. And so that's what he is warning them about here.
Similar rhetorical question in Romans 8, that God is for us.
Who can be against us? Exactly. Yep, Scott. And I see that too in the other instances where, again, that sort of far right where they're out, just the protest side of things just can kind of get ugly on both sides. And, you know, the true disciple of Christ, is that the way they should be? And so when we look at this idea, that, yes, we should be ready to give a defense. It doesn't say go on the defensive, but we should be ready to give that offense. But we should do that in meekness and in fear. We should live peaceably. Other thoughts or comments? Yeah, Tim?
It kind of goes back to his point that he made about women and not adorning themselves with pearls and everything. His point was, let people see the good in you from a spiritual perspective. Let them notice that match. So I think the same point is here, in that we should be proactively speaking about God. When we study Him, when we know about Him, it just pours out of us. It's,
right.
It's a relationship that we're proud to be, in. And I think what this does is if we were better about that, and I think this is an issue for all Christians everywhere, we're not very good at that. We've gotten very quiet. Mm-hmm. And so homosexuality and some other things have crept in because we haven't continued to speak out about those things and say, that's not okay, and to share that with people. And so I think this passage teaches us that if we have that spirit, if we have that meek, gentle spirit, and we continue to share with people, this is my God.
Right.
This is how awesome He is.
Right.
If we do that, then some of these other things, these evil things, will at least recede or withdraw. Mm-hmm.
Right. Other thoughts or comments? Exactly.
And everybody around you, we live in a very hopeless age, and a lot of people have no direction in their life. So we have a hope and a meekness and fear, and it's grounded, and we're going to stand out for that.
Right.
People are going to be attracted to that and sense that they have in their lives. So I think that's the challenge here, is that we have a hopeful life, and that we're ready to, in a good way, to give the defense in a real way. Not
right.
Just some mushy feeling, but with Scripture and have something that's grounded. And I think that's what the picture of what it shows us.
Good point. Other comments here? Because I think, and again, everybody's kind of pointing towards this in the society that we live in today, is that if we take these stands, then we're the ones who are intolerant. And that's not the case. And so, again, we need to find a way that we can give that defense, as Ashley had pointed out. But the only way in which they're going to ask, and I think that's what Ashley was getting at, you have to live that life that they see that. And if we live a life, perhaps as Tim was pointed out, that we don't speak up, we sort of shy away from those things. Not that we're looking for a fight, not that we're looking for confrontation, but we need to live that way that people can see that we are unique. Better?
The primary defense here is the reason for the hope that is in you. And obviously in any discussion, we can talk about doctrinal things with the Bible, and that's appropriate, but if they don't understand that Jesus was raised from the dead, and, you know,
sure.
The hope I always look at, the living hope by the resurrection of the dead, and the
good point. Scott, do you have I didn't know if you were raising your hand there for a second. That's right.
That's not always the best decision. You know,
right.
Sometimes
right.
You have to go, yep, I agree with that, but
yeah.
Is it the best route to go for me to,
right.
to continue God's word and be?
Yeah. Yeah. Sarah, do you have a comment? Nobody's going
to
ask.
I mean, I don't have to be a Bible reader to stand up and
right.
start speaking out about all these issues, but I do need to live my life in a way of being
right.
a meek, kind of spirit that someone would go notice and go, I
yeah.
can ask her what
right.
she thinks.
Right. Yeah. Good point.
Be
yes. Thank you for your comments this morning.